to match them. We couldn't match them, but we had to try our best. But I can show you this on paper, and I can back it up on paper. It's an absolute fact. For a particular period of time, in the month of March, stroke into early April, we were selling unleaded petrol on our forecourt for 4 cents a litre of a loss. Now, there's people who would listen to this and say, he's talking rubbish, and that's, there's just no way that's going to sound. I can prove it to you, Clem Ryan, on paper. We were selling it at 4 cents a litre of a loss, because there was one particular oil company in Ireland were doing predatory practices, or whatever you like to call it, and they made a complete and utter bags of it for everybody, but they made a bags of it for the consumer. And what's happening is now, we're trying our best to survive as independent guys, whatever it can be. But I only have one margin on my fuel. I have the retailer margin on my fuel. Some other companies that are company-owned sites who bring in products into Ireland, they have the wholesale margin and they have the retail margin.
So all right, let's not lose people, Adrian, who are not into the business and don't understand wholesale margins and retail margins.
Go on, the
message that we wanted to get across to people here is, you know, with the escalating fuel cost and the government saying, yeah, well, we're not going to reduce it and we can't do this and our hands are tied and everything else. And we had many listeners saying here, blaming the retailers, saying, oh, it's one price tonight, you go in the following morning, the price has gone up again, they're profit gouging and so on. People will be astonished to hear that the margin to the retailer is as low as between 2 cents and 5 cents a litre. I suppose it begs the question why you bother selling it then in the first place. But many retailers...
The nature of the business has changed, Clem. It's gone from outside to inside. And the outside is the attraction to get people in for the fuel, whatever it case may be. But it's coming very, very close to the point that it just actually won't be worth our while selling.
What you mean by outside to inside is that by getting people in to get their petrol, they then go into the shop and they buy various products and stuff like that. So it's absolutely astonishing. You might answer very briefly for me one reason. Why the change in price overnight? Why can it be X this evening, and then I go into a retail station the next morning and I find the price has moved again? We were always told that the price will only move if a tanker of fuel has been delivered overnight. But in many cases, tankers of fuel are not being delivered overnight, but yet the prices are fluctuating.
Yeah. Very, very simple and very quick answer for that is we will look at our stocks at any given day. What we're doing at the moment is we're trying to get the maximum out of the lowest price on a sale per day. So if I move my price last night, I've been watching my stocks for the last 3 or 4 days. When the old stock at the old price, we were actually working out, has gone out of the tank, we put the price up. We took a delivery maybe 3 days ago, but if there was stock, old stock in it at the older price, we leave the older price for the benefit to have the price as cheap as possible. So whenever the old stock is gone, that's the way we're doing it at the moment. Regardless where we're taking the tanker load, when the old stock is gone at the old price, we have to put the price up.
Okay, what drew me to remarking it yesterday was I saw a tweet by a guy called Con Murphy 2 nights ago, which said, in 2008, crude oil hit record prices of €143 per barrel. This was reflected at the pumps, where petrol in 2008 was costing €1.20 a litre. Mm-hmm. Today, that was when he posted the tweet 2 days ago, crude oil was at €120 per barrel, but the pump price was an average €220. And he went on to say, don't be fooled by this. The reason that it's now double the price is government taxation. And that is what the point that we were trying to get at. And I think your calculation of a take for the retailer of between 2 and 5 cents will shock people as regards, and it'll put an end to the argument of profit gouging going on by the retailer, but it certainly raises questions about what the wholesaler on the one hand are doing with prices, and particularly the massive level of tax and excise duties and everything else that the government is taking, which is up around, I think at this stage, 60-70% of the average forecourt price. Adrian Conlon of Conlon's Fuel Depot in Athy on the Kilcullen Road there. I drop in nearly on a daily basis, I have to say. Well done to you and your staff in there. You provide a great service, Adrian. And thanks for joining us this morning. Your music and more. Your music.
Care Today with Clem, Owen and Kira.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, folks, let's catch up on some of your messages and apologies for taking so long to do that. That first hour proved very busy. By the way, thanks to Brendan Byrne in Hackettstown in Carlow, who actually sent me that tweet, Brendan, that I referred to on the programme yesterday as well. Yeah, astonishing, isn't it, that the retailer of petrol in our forecourts is only taking a couple of cents profit on it. A couple of cents profit is all they're getting on it. And basically, the selling of petrol and diesel now is really to get people in, maybe to buy the other stuff in the outlets, whether it be sandwiches or the breakfast roll or any other thing or groceries or whatever. Amazing. Now, we talked about the exams earlier this morning, and KFM, I was pass Irish for junior cert, but my school put me in higher for leaving cert. I struggled for nearly 2 years before they allowed me to go back to pass just before the exams. It really put me off the language because I just couldn't catch up, says Aoife in Newbridge. It often works the other way around, Aoife. You find schools trying to get people out of honours classes down to pass because they're not able for the honours. In your case, it's interesting that it was the reverse. Well, don't hate the language, because the system was the problem, not the language. I love Irish, as people know. I've loved it all my life. I was lucky to be educated through the medium of Irish. From the day I went into school, it was all Irish, primary. And in secondary school, every subject was done through Irish. Everything. And we spoke Irish. Yeah, but I've always had a great grow for the language as well. And unfortunately, the education system is responsible for many people's negative feelings towards the language. And the one argument that I will not accept from anyone is, what good is Irish to you? Because that particular argument could be used against many of the subjects that we study. What good is it to you? And that particular argument could be used by the speakers of a native language of nearly every country in the world, other than English. What good is my language X to me? You know, I'm never going to move out of Germany. I'm never going to move out of Slovakia. I'm never going to move out of Greece. I'm never going to move out of etc., etc., etc. Anyway, I did my leaving in 1986 as a listener during the World Cup with all late night games. I had no chance being up late to watch the games. I think the leaving cert should be held much later in June. Well done. You had your priorities right there anyway. Watch the matches in regards to that. I won't give out your name or anything else in regards to it, okay? Mick says, has somebody done some kind of pesticides, weed killer, or even beech or whatever else? Well, we'll know about that in the next couple of days, and as soon as we find out what has happened to Rye River, we'll tell you about it. Michael Higgins signed off the oil from the Irish people to God knows who. The president didn't sign off anything. The president has no role in signing on or signing off anything in to do with selling of oil or petrol. KFM, on CNN News yesterday morning, President Biden of the US said oil companies were buying their own crude oil to hike up the prices for profit for shareholders, and he said it would be investigated. If it's true, he would come down hard on him, he said. That's according to Michael in Kilberry. All right, Owen, we're ready to nearly move on there in the next minute or so of you just source the next guest or whatever else, because we're running a bit behind time. So just to check out what else is coming in. A listener says Andy Cross is online. Andy, well-known businessman himself. And he says an email to studio at kfmradio.com. Majumwa Clem Kira agus Owen agus Goleir at KFM. Taxes on petrol and diesel for oil. All right, you've given me an attachment. Let me have a look at that, Andy, and hopefully the attachment will open for me. The taxes on it. Okay, here we go. This is for April, and the pump price from AA Ireland was petrol. Just let's go through that. At that stage, 180.9. The price before taxes are added. Excise duty was at nearly 38 cents. The carbon tax, 10 cents. The climate levy, 2 cents. The better energy levy, 0.12 of 1 cent. 23% VAT, €33.83. So the total tax of €1.08 of a petrol, a litre of petrol, which was priced at 180.9 last April, the total tax take on it was 83.36 cent, or 46% of it was going to the government. There you go. Right? On diesel, the same, slightly less. 79.17 cents of a 190 cent charge at the forecourt was going in tax. 41%. So in April, between 41.5% and 46% of the cost of a litre of petrol is going back to the government. And the government are saying then, ah, we can't do anything, our hands are tied. Now petrol has gone to €2, and remember, and beyond €2, 2.10, 2.14, the higher the cost at the forecourt goes, the higher the tax the government is taking. So if the government was taking 83 cents of every €1.80 tax in April, that means that they're taking a lot more of that now, up a 90 cents tax, and possibly more, where it's priced at €2. Thanks, Andy Cross, for those figures. That's very, very useful indeed. But just that we could put people in the know that the fuel retailers, their margins are so small that it's ridiculous. Now, we have a press release in regards, I don't know who has issued this press release, Inland Fisheries Ireland. Owen, you might get hold of that press release before I get worn out. And I'll go back to you in a couple of minutes' time and we'll read it, OK? The Inland Fisheries Ireland have issued the press release in relation to that fish kill on the River Rye, which we're also upset about. OK, clutter. Are you a clutterer? Well, maybe is your home full of stuff you might not need, but you haven't got around to clearing it out? Are you one of those people who keeps things forever? Is it, why would you keep things forever? Is it because it brings back memories, or you just can't throw it out, or you feel you might wear it or use it again? Am I a clutterer? I'd be inclined to say I'm not. But am I a person who hangs on to stuff? Yes, I am. Very much so. But I tend to tidy it away. Let's hear more anyway, because I'm joined by professional declutterer, help, and author of the book Stuff Happens, Emma Gleeson. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Emma, am I a clutterer?
Well, it sounds like you might be hiding clutter from yourself. If you tidy it away. You know, we often, having a house that's full of fudge is often a double-edged sword, because you're just giving pain to your future self when you have to clear it out. But maybe we'll uncover whether you're a clutterer or not in the conversation.
I suspect, and my other half might be shouting at the radio now saying,
"Yeah, we'd need to bring them in to get the real picture."
Yeah, he is a clutterer. I could hear the shouts at the radio now, because deep in his wardrobe, you'll find stuff that could be 20 years old on the basis as, sure, that's a good shirt. Why would I throw that out? I might wear it again. And 20 years on, it's still away. So what's going on with us who might be, you know, can't overcome our need to hang on to stuff?
So there are so many different things at play. You know, clutter, a lot of my clients feel a lot of shame about the amount of stuff they have kept on to. But what I say to everybody is the impulse to hang on to things is so normal. So if you're feeling a lot of kind of upset about your habits, you are so normal. I think that it's very hard to get rid of stuff, because as humans, we want resources. You know, our little animal brains want to have the things we need to keep us alive. But that is now clashing with our consumer culture, where everything is so cheap and available to us. There's a thing called the endowment effect, which I think is interesting to understand, which is that once you have bought something, its value for you increases massively. So even if you see the same item in a shop and you think, oh, I don't need that, but if it's at home, it's like a, you know, made of gold to you. I also think there's something interesting, particularly about Irish people here, because, you know, traditionally we were a very poor country. you know, our grandparents and maybe even our parents would still be very frugal and would be, you know, keeping everything, that kind of wartime mentality. And that's very hard to contend with when, yeah, we have the Middle Island Little and, you know, Penny's and Primark coming into our homes. So if you can understand, there are so many different things at play with stopping you from getting rid of stuff. Like, the sentimental factor is huge, obviously. You know, I get a lot of requests from people trying to clear out their loved ones, things that their loved one has passed away. And it's very, very individual and unique to each person. And what I would say is, if you are struggling, it's just take your time with it. Understand this is a big deal. You know, objects hold meaning for us, and there's nothing wrong about that. It doesn't make you materialistic or, you know, shallow or whatever. It's very normal to be attached to your things. The wardrobe is a whole other kettle of fish. You know, there's body image in there. You know, well, am I the person I used to be when I wore this suit or this dress? You know, I think particularly for women, if they've had a family, you know, their bodies and their style changes so much, it's hard to get rid of the clothes that represent who you used to be. So listen, there's so much in there.
So, I mean, should I be still hanging on to my floral shirt and bell bottoms from the age of love and flower power?
Well, look, if they matter to you, you know, I'm not a minimalist, and people are often shocked to hear that. I'm not sitting there with my Marie Kondo, you know, everything white and one single sad cactus.
But like, you're a reformed hoarder yourself, Emma Gleeson.
I am. You've outed me. I am. I mean, that word hoarder is... I use that word tongue-in-cheek. You know, that is a genuine anxiety disorder that lots of people suffer with. When I say hoarder, I mean, I used to be a costume designer, so I used to accumulate a lot of things, you know, for plays that I was working on. And I realised that I was just getting a bit suffocated with it all. So I've come from a place of understanding. You know, I'm not someone who's always been super organised and super clear about, you know, what they buy and what they bring into their home. My main message with tackling clutter, and we can talk about maybe how you approach a day of decluttering in a second, but my main message is watch what comes into the house in the first place. My whole book is about the root cause of clutter is shopping.
Well, and if I might just add, in Stuff Happens, your book about managing clutter, clearing your head and discovering what's really important, I suppose the tagline is, life is messy and sometimes so is your space. By God, that's for sure.
But it's totally normal. But, you know, there are so many books about decluttering but the message in my book is slightly different, is that, like, you have to stop clutter before it gets into the house. You have to change your shopping habits. You have to say, do I need another pair of jeans, really? You know, and I don't shame anyone for how much they want to shop. That's not where I come from at all. But it's about trying to save yourself money, save yourself headspace, save yourself actual space in your home, and actually own things that really make you feel good and that you like, particularly with your clothes, and particularly with things like cosmetics or books, you know, that are cheap and you can pick up. Just think, do I really need it? And think of your future self who will have to eventually get rid of it.
I'm going to make a completely loaded sexist statement here now, and then I'll fire myself, and then I won't go home this evening on the basis of that. I mean, I'll ask, is this a mainly women thing about the wardrobe, or a mainly man thing? For example, in regards to get rid of all those clothes in the wardrobe, they're there years, and then off I go shopping and I buy an entire new set of stuff to just clutter the wardrobe again.
Well, this is, again, it's one of the main themes in my book, is this, it's what I call a clutter cycle, where we think, oh, I'll do a clear out and I'll feel really good and virtuous and I'll bring things to the recycling shop, you know, to the charity shop or whatever, and then you go out and buy again. And it's every 6 months people are doing this, and it's bananas. You're wasting money. You're not, you know, our clothes are supposed to make us feel good and grow with us, and you're not, it's so much more enjoyable to shop and dress yourself at a slower pace. It really is. And when you've been shopping that way for a long time, it's hard to detach from that. I would say, I mean, clothes, you know, fashion changes for women more frequently. So, you know, I would betray my sex now by saying that, yeah, I imagine that women shop more for clothes.
Yeah.
But I have had many male clients who struggle with a stuffed wardrobe that they can't get rid of.
But let's broaden the basis, Emma, because, you know, yes, and we're we're having a bit of crack here now with this, but it is a very serious situation because there are serious psychological issues at play here on why we can't let go of stuff. Now, there is the scenario whereby many people are familiar. Ah, Jesus, I have too many clothes in the wardrobe. I bought that 20 years ago. I don't want to get rid of it. I loved it at the time and it might come back in again. But there's also beyond that, the area of, which sometimes we see in our television, where the clutter situation extends to furniture, hanging on to stuff, where the house practically becomes uninhabitable.
Yes, well, that's a proper, as I said, it's a proper anxiety disorder, you know, recognised by the DSM. And, you know, that requires a counsellor and a psychiatrist to help people with, because that's, it's not about the stuff, it's about the anxiety that is the root of stuff. You know, often a hoarding problem develops after someone has died or a big life change. It's a kind of a way to assert control over your life. You know, if I keep everything together, I'll feel safe. The furniture thing can happen, you know, if you inherit furniture. And I often say to people, you know, don't clutter dump on your relatives. Like, ask them if they want stuff. There are other things can also represent, you know, the money spent on them that can just sit there, putting out little rays of guilt at you every time you see them. You know, if you open your wardrobe every day and you see, you know, 3/4 of the stuff is unworn, you're going to feel bad about yourself at the start of your day. You know, there's a real, it's not just about clearing space, it's about actually lifting yourself out of that quagmire. If you're stuck with the, like, I bought this and it was good suit then, blah, blah, really sit with it and see, okay, what do I actually feel about this suit? Is it that I feel guilty that I spent money on it and I don't wear it? Is it that I feel bad that it doesn't fit me anymore and I feel bad about how I look? Is it that it represents, you know, a different lifestyle that I had that I miss? You know, you have to get to the root of what each item is doing for you. Because if you just look at your full wardrobe and say, oh, I can't deal with it, you're never going to get anywhere. So you have to take it piece by piece. And mind yourself, because things really have emotional power over us. And if you're getting upset or bogged down, that is totally normal.
Could I reduce it to, I see Daniela Miles, by the way, who did a review of your book, and she'd be a good Newbridge person. And
yeah.
In regards to all her family who are listening out there, she said, it's not just practical. I loved how brilliantly Emma explained the psychology behind so many common problems we all have in dealing with our stuff. And of course, stuff is like, you know, those B-horror movies. It's like the big blob that eventually crawls all over the house and smothers everything. If I might use a sporting analogy, Emma Gleeson, in rugby, there's an expression always at the scrum where the referee shouts at the scrum half, use it, meaning use it or lose it. Is that the most fundamental line that we need to bring to all that clutter in our house? Either you use it or lose it, get rid of it.
I mean, yes and no. There's nuance there. Mostly yes. Mostly yes. You have to justify an item. But if it has sentimental value, you know, you can keep it, but just don't have it in your immediate eye line. And now if you're getting out of, overboard with the sentimental items, that's a whole other... You know, you can't use that excuse to justify everything. But the it's useful excuse has a real hold on people, particularly men. Like, that's a real problem for male clients. You know, the box of old wires.
I have them. Yeah, I have the box of old wires.
I think every man in Ireland has one. I did a radio interview recently. I can't remember who it was, but the man said, "And now I used a wire that I hadn't used in 14 years," and I was like, "Oh, jeez." Oh no, he's upset my whole theory.
And can I add to the back box of wires, I also have boxes of nails, of screws, of other bits and pieces, used light fittings, a collection of plugs, sockets, things like that. Because you never know. I might build an extension and use all of these again.
But this is it. This is what I'm saying about the frugality. You know, the keep it, it'll be useful. It's bred into us from our grandparents, from the wartime mentality, from the poverty mentality that we is in our bones, you know?
Yeah.
But the problem is, you know, is that stuff all over the house or where is it? You know, you can keep a certain amount of that stuff as long as it's out of sight and not bothering you. You know, clutter can really stress you out visually on a day-to-day basis. Now, some people like having a cluttered house, like some artists like that. But for most ordinary people, clutter everywhere, it takes a kind of a toll on your brain. So if you are keeping that kind of long-term, might be useful stuff, keep it out of sight. And the clothes that don't fit you anymore or that are sentimental, get them out of your everyday wardrobe, because they're either making you feel bad or making you feel like you have so many clothes and I don't want to wear any of them, so I better buy more.
All right.
Where in your everyday wardrobe, if you have clothes that fit you and make you feel good, you won't want to buy as much stuff.
Well, let's amend that rugby referee's expression of use it or lose it to, if you don't use it, lose it. And listen, I'll have a look at all those wires and plugs and bags of nails and everything else this evening. I keep them all out of sight so they never bother me until the ones here. You've got it. You've nailed it so well there, I have to say, in terms of the description, that I suspect at the end of the day that everyone amongst us is some form of clutterer. We tend to hang on to stuff, and you've offered very good reasons. I think it's something that bred into us, maybe in times when we weren't so well off, or, you know,
that's
there wasn't
think,
so much
yeah.
stuff available to consumers or whatever. But anyway, hopefully, use it or lose it, folks. And Emma Gleeson, she describes herself as a reformed hoarder as well. Her book, one of a number that she's written, this one, Stuff Happens, Manage Your Clutter, Clear Your Head, and discover what's really important. You can check it out, by the way, on various websites as well. Emma, great talking to you this morning.
Thanks so much. Good morning.
All right. I can imagine now every household at the moment is lodging into conversation. You're the clutterer. You're the one that hangs on to stuff in this house. I don't know. I sentimental value.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. On the way in a minute, we're going to the Clanmunis Municipal District. Of course, we'll be then previewing the two big matches this weekend involving Kildare and Mayo. And just to catch up on some of your other messages now. A listener says, I would like to see the tolls gone, says JJ. We've had enough taxes paid over the 20 years, but by God, I'll tell you, the toll bridges and the roads must be well paid for at this stage. Hundreds of people, says JJ, rat run through the small towns daily to avoid the tolls. Trucks and cars causing pollution and congestion and danger on back roads. So the government should be able to afford to cut the cost, and it might, as he says, undo that kind of thing with the rat running. A suggestion from Mick Craddock. He says, love the Kira. I love the afternoon show. He says, auto renewal for house insurance, not nice. A bit sneaky, unethical, should be banned in Ireland. I suffered this recently. I would like to see the topic discussed. Michelle says, could you mention that Kildare Animal Foundation has a stand at the Antiques Fair in Abbeyleaks Manor Hotel, Abbeyleaks, this Sunday from 12 noon. Jewellery, furniture, coins, art and much more down in Abbeyleaks. Michelle Kennan there with that message. How are you, Michelle? Good to hear from you. And the Kildare Animal Foundation, which does such great work, will have a stall at that. And I've just washed 17 tops and more to go. I need a life, says a listener. Trish Proctor in Castle Dermot. You washed 17 tops. Ah, you need to use them or lose them. Kira.
I'm joined now by Fine Gael Councillor for Clanmunith MD. That is Brendan Wells. Good morning to you, Brendan. You asked for a progress report from the council. This is on a piece of land which is owned by the county council at Ashgrove in Derrinturn. You asked for it to include what plans the council have and what cleanup arrangements are planned for the land.
Well, we did meet out there a number of the councillors from the MD with officials, and we were appalled at the level of dumping on this particular piece of land. It's at the back of council houses, and it's owned by Kildare County Council. But officials visited the site recently and have assured me that appropriate action is now going to be taken, including the possibility of fencing it off altogether, because there are other people coming in from outside dumping there as well.
Okay, you also asked the council to confirm whose responsibility it is for emptying the dog waste box. That's at the entrance to the public park in Prosperous.
Yes, this was put in by Kildare County Council, but the answer I got was very vague. So I've asked that it be left in the progress report and for the officials to come back with a plan to show us that they can empty this box on a regular basis, because I'm getting regular complaints from residents in Prosperous that the box is full, flowing out onto the footpath, and it's very unpleasant at the entrance to the lovely park that we've recently opened up in Prosperous.
Just to let people know, the council did say the park section did not install the dog waste box and does not know who installed it. The section does not have the capacity to empty it, but can arrange for its removal if the box in its current location is an issue.
I can assure you it was put in by Kildare County Council.
Okay, well, I just have to note their reply, Brendan, as you can imagine.
Well, I can tell you that also that we know who the park section put it in, and we're waiting now for a satisfactory outcome to make sure that this box is emptied on a regular basis.
Okay.
And I will have a progress report, I'm told, for the next meeting.
Okay, great. Next month, July's meeting, we will speak with you about that then. And finally, Brendan, you asked for an update on the old health centre. That's in Carberry Village. You also asked for it to include what plans the council has to give it back to the local community.
Well, now we are told this is going on for quite some time. This is vacant now, and the local community are looking for it for local use. So now we've been told that they can apply for a grant, and the council are applying for a grant themselves to refurbish this and give it back to the community. And we're hoping that this will be done by the end of the year.
Okay, we appreciate your time this morning. That is Councillor Brendan Weld, Fine Gael Councillor. And just to let people know what the council did say in regards to that, the community team is working with the local group to make a funding application for the project from the recently launched Community Centres Investment Fund, a new capital fund of €15 million, which will provide funding for the improvement and refurbishment of existing community centres. Once funding has been identified, work will commence on the building. That is the report from Kildare County Council there, Clem.
Thank you, Ciara, for that. Coming up now, we have, of course, the sport as well. But, Owen, I want to reference that statement that the Inland Waterways have just issued in regards to that topic that we had earlier. We spoke with Councillor Joe Neville, Fine Gael Councillor in the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District, and resident and indeed research scientist in the Selbridge Leixlip area, Dylan O'Flynn, as well, in regards to that particular pollution, which has seen hundreds and hundreds of fish dead in the Rye River. What's Inland Waterways saying about it?
Yeah, so this is Inland Fisheries Ireland have sent this statement into us. They're the state agency responsible for the protection and conservation of freshwater fish and habitats. They're investigating a serious fish kill incident at the River Rye Water in Leixlip. Environmental and fisheries officers from the Eastern River Basin District in Dublin were alerted to the incident on Wednesday evening, the 8th of June. Water and fish samples were taken from the scene and removed for scientific analysis at an independent laboratory. Inland Fisheries Ireland estimates that there could be in excess of 500 mortalities of brown trout plus other fish species in the impacted 2 kilometres area of river. Investigations are ongoing. Inland Fisheries Ireland is not in a position to comment on the cause of the fish kill at this particular stage, pending further analysis of the samples. The River Rye Water is an important spawning river for brown trout and a key spawning channel for a highly sensitive population of Atlantic salmon within the River Liffey catchment area. And the statement finishes by saying, to report fish kills, members of the public are encouraged to call IFI or Inland Fisheries Ireland's confidential hotline number on 0818 347424, and that's open 24 hours a day. So that concludes the statement. But that's some number, 500 mortalities of brown trout along a 2 kilometre area of river. And also, as I mentioned in the interview as well, it's a spawning area for the very, very rare and, I suppose, endangered Atlantic salmon, and it's a nursery, so we're after losing quite a lot of fish there.
Owen, it's terrible. I mean, the attachments, with that statement came attachments, and it's so sad to see fish floating in the river belly up, all dead and wiped out by what has happened there. And I know you're a keen fisherman yourself, and as Joe Neville told us earlier on, they have identified the source, which they say is a surface water pipe, but they've yet to identify what's gone into the river. Now, as Dylan said, Dylan O'Flynn, and he's an expert in this particular area. It could be to do with natural stuff that comes with the surface water, maybe too much of it going into the water. I'm not overly familiar with the situation. But the fish kill could have been caused by natural means as well. But I don't know. It's highly unusual, is it not?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it was a natural means would have killed 500 fish. Like, obviously, we can't comment on it until the investigations are carried out, but even just from looking from the outside in, you would imagine that it was something external. And just to remind people as well, the advice, if you're walking a dog, make sure the dog doesn't get in to the River Rye. Make sure children don't get in. Don't go near that water until we have more information on the investigations and the outcome of the analysis.
Yeah, because it might not be natural at all, and given that so many fish have been killed, it would be unlikely that suddenly there would be such a surge in an natural effluent that would cause that. Now, is it sewage? We don't know. I think Joe might be speculating that it might be indicative, such is the extent of it, of a sewage. But again, we're awaiting the official results. But also, a listener sent in a message earlier on, and it said, you know, it could be to do with the chemicals people use on the ground. Weed killer, glyphosate, all that sort of stuff. The fertilizers we spray over the ground. If that got into the surface water and then flowed into the river. But certainly, I mean, you would say, well, the use of those chemicals happens every year and it doesn't result in the River Rye being practically wiped out. And then there are the implications, Owen, for the Liffey as well.
Yeah, because I think the as Joe said, the Rye River runs into the Liffey, and that particular area would have been used by fly fishers, etc., and people who are out walking. So, very, very sad. And obviously
we need to take care.
Yeah.
Right. And not just in the Rye River in Leixlip, by the way, but because the Liffey could be impacted as well. The Liffey flows down right through Kildare here. The Dubs think they own the Liffey. They don't. It all starts in Kildare, does it? Where does the Liffey rise, by the way?
Oh, is it... Well, I know the aqueduct obviously is important, the way the canal goes over the Liffey River in the aqueduct in Salins.
Go away.
Where it rises, I don't know.
You're bluffing now. You know, you're just trying to kill time in regards to where the Liffey rises. But, it does flow into the county, but most people associate the Liffey with the Dubs. I'm told that the River Liffey...
It rises in the Wicklow Mountains.
In the Wicklow Mountains. 20 miles... away from Dublin. Right. So who owns the Liffey then? In regards to that. The Irish Sea, I suppose, at the end of it. So it starts in the Wicklow Mountains, flows down through Kildare, and eventually finishes up in Dublin. Now, that's where the Liffey enters the sea. Thanks for that, Owen.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Okay, just to finish with the Liffey before we go to sport. By the way, we've told you the Liffey rises in County Wicklow. Indeed, it sprouts or spurts from a bog around Kipure Mountain. It comes as a small spring. It's about 8 kilometres northeast of the Kipure Estate. It's about 1,800 feet over sea level. That's where the Liffey all begins in Wicklow. Oh, that's wonderful. And then flowing through Kildare... and eventually enters the sea via Dublin. Its journey, 82 miles long, the Liffey. I never knew that. Did you, Tommy Calla, never know that?
Oh, yeah, Ken, yeah.
Oh, listen, you got honours in your geography in the Leaving Cert in 1920. Right, OK, 82 miles long and rises in the Kipure Estate, some 8 kilometres north of that in the mountains in County Wicklow, 1,800 feet above sea level. Tommy... All right, let's not moan about the fact that Kildare and Mayo supporters have to be in two venues within 24 hours on Sunday. Surely, Saturday and Sunday, surely it could have been avoided. But anyway, we are where we are now. The big question, Tommy, can Kildare recover morally, spirit-wise, from what happened in the Leinster final?
That's what it's all about now, Clem. After that hiding against Dublin... It's going to be difficult because players have to lift themselves. At least they had a couple of weeks of a break anyway. There was a time you were straight into it the following week, which gave you no chance at all. This time around, a couple of weeks of a break. I'm sure they have discussed it and analysed it and videoed it and went through it. And it's only a matter now of seeing what way we come out and how we can perform on Saturday.
The game throws in at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. Kildare and Mayo are meeting only for the fourth time in the Championship. The most recent Championship meeting was back in 2018 in the qualifiers. Kildare won that thrilling game in Newbridge, 21 points to 19. But contrasting fortunes in the league this year, Tommy, Mayo reached the final, were beaten in that before losing in Mayo to in Connacht to Galway. But they went on, beaten Monaghan, albeit by a single point. Kildare, on the other hand, were relegated, beat Louth, but beat Westmeath, then fell apart against Dublin. So the big issue tomorrow, contrasting, even though Colm O'Rourke is saying that Kildare might spring a surprise, Mayo have to be red hot favourites, if only for the record of recent years and familiarity with Croke Park.
Oh yeah, first of all, I wouldn't be too concerned what Colm O'Rourke would be thinking.
Listen, it's a big day
for Kildare. It's a big day for the team, and it's a big, big day for the Kildare management. I think the team, when it's announced, everybody's really waiting to see what kind of a team is going to be announced. There's going to be changes. There has to be changes. How many there is going to be is really, we just have to wait and see that. But there'll certainly be minimum, I would imagine, minimum three, maybe four, possibly even go out to five. And if you go back to the Mayo League match, Clem, we were in that match well at half time. We were trailing by a point, 110 to 12 points. But even at that stage, there was indications that our defence wasn't what it should have been. Mayo opened us up a few times, and they did the same in the second half and won comfortably in the end. And that was really the start, I think, looking back on it, when we realised we had a bit of a problem at the back. And when I say we had a problem at the back, it doesn't necessarily mean the back six or the back seven. It comes from, as Glenn Ryan always says, the first line of defence is your corner forward.
Your corner forward. And then it became more evident, conceding 2:15 against Westmeath. I remember you saying on this programme, Tommy, being concerned about that and writing about it in the Leader. And then, of course, 5:17, five goals conceded in the first 27 minutes in the Leinster final. Let's hear what Glenn Ryan has to say.
I wouldn't say we'll brush it away. No different to any other game. We have to look at it and see where we can improve and what we can get better at. I suppose we're playing this game because we love playing Gaelic football, and days like this you not necessarily hate it, but you hate what comes along with it. But we have an opportunity to redeem today. That's important, because I don't believe what we've seen in the first 35 minutes or indeed throughout the game is representative of this group of players. To have an opportunity to show people that today was a big bump in the road and what we're going to learn from it, and hopefully, I'm sure these lads will.
Quite positive view from Glenn. We'll have a full interview, of course. Don't forget our Kildare Weekend Sports Review this evening from around 6:25, when we'll have full interviews with Glenn on that. We'll have full commentary of the game tomorrow evening with Ger McNally and Peter McConnon in association with Hanlon Concrete Products of Robertstown. It's a tall order, Tommy, but all we can do is urge everyone to get behind the players, put the Leinster final behind them, and do whatever can be done to resurrect the morale and the spirit tomorrow evening.
Absolutely, Clem. Listen, everybody knows it's a tall order. It's always a tall order when you're coming in through the back door. But I mean, our record in the back door is not too bad at all, you know. I mean, I think we've played 40 games in the back door.
You have indeed. Kildare have won 28.
Won 28 and drawn one and lost 11.
That's so correct.
You know, I mean, we always had, I mean, probably the big time under when Kieran McGeaney was here, we had a great runs in qualifiers at that stage. We were actually knocked out in the first round in the Leinster and Madonna way to, I think, the Ireland quarter final one year.
That's
so
correct.
I mean, it can be done. Qualifiers is all about winning your first match, of course. And I know there's not as many qualifying rounds now as there was back then.
Mayo
weren't overly impressive against Monaghan. You know, they won by a point. Monaghan were very aggrieved after the match over a couple of refereeing decisions. Hopefully that doesn't come into it on Saturday.
All right. Okay, 220 to 18 points was the most recent league encounter between Mayo and Kildare. We'll see how all that goes anyway. Tommy, then on to Tullamore at 2:30 on Sunday. In terms of the minor quarter final, again, Kildare against Mayo. Most unfortunate, maybe that couldn't have been fitted into Croke Park as even a third game on a triple header. Here's what manager Niall Cronin has to say.
Mayo are going to be going in with a lot of confidence. Very good side, very fast, very good and physical, strong team. Well able to run at Galway last Monday night and obviously had a fairly emphatic win. They're very well prepared and they're in a good place by the looks of things. So we will have to up our game. We'll have to perform better than we did the last time. But I certainly believe there's a better performance in our team. We have to look at our targets and the standards we set ourselves. We have to try and reach those targets now.
Kildare minor manager Niall Cronin, that a clip from a main interview we'll have with him on the weekend preview this evening from 6:25. They have to climb a hill following a disappointment performance in the Leinster Championship, Tommy.
A very, very disappointing performance in the Leinster final, Clem. I'd seen Kildare minors go a few times this year and I really thought they were coming together as a really good team, and going down to play Dublin that day, we're very confident that we'd get a good result out of it. And we led by a point at half time of that day, and it was a dirty, old, wet, miserable day or evening. And playing against the wind in the first half, we were then maybe a little bit fortunate to go in leading by one point at half time. But it was a great position to be in. But there was a strong wind behind our backs in the second half. You felt Kildare, the momentum was going to be with Kildare. But I don't know what it was, but a Dublin up to a game, Kildare maybe thought that. Especially younger lads. Remember, these lads are under 17. You know, they're very young. Some of them are only 16. Will never win the game. It'll help you to win the game, but it'll never win the game for you. You have to go out and do it. And it was Dublin that took the initiative that day, and Dublin played very well in the second half. Kildare just did not perform that day, and I firmly believe, as Niall said there, that they're a better team than what they showed that day. Now, whether they're good enough to beat Mayo on Sunday is another matter. Mayo only won the Connacht title last Monday night, which in itself is crazy as well, mind you.